Labor and Health, we had invited two committees to have a joint sitting with them today, the Committee on Trade and Industry and Committee on Health. We saw the need to call this meeting wherein we're going to have presentations from the two main role players after we had visited one of the pharmaceutical companies in the Eastern Cape, where we had a joint visit with the Committee on Trade and Industry in March 2015. The visit to Aspen in the Eastern Cape exposed us to some of the issues that we felt the need to get more knowledge, more information around. Those issues are around supply chain issues, are also around transformation issues within the sector. We also felt that there's also a need to understand the skills aspect around the issue that is needed. Moreover, that when we look at our NGP new growth plan, it's emphasizing on creating skills in that particular sector, and our NDP identified pharmaceuticals together with the IPEP as one of the levers that could assist in creating jobs and also in growing our economy. So we felt it important that we should then jointly with our sister committees request a presentation from the people who are actively involved in this particular sector, which one of them is the Department of Trade and Industry and also the Department of Health. As you all know, we also had one of the tenders around, I think it was 2015 years, on the provision of ARVs. And that also arose in our interaction with Aspen as one of the critical areas that needs to be looked at. So we just want the two departments to also brief us on what exactly transpired during that process, and what are the issues that we need to be briefed on around the very same process. Ours is not really to question anything, but just to have an understanding, so that if there are areas that need to be looked at when overseeing the work of the Department of Economic Development, Trade and Industry and Health, we are able to do so from an informed position. So with me here is the chair of the Health Portfolio Committee. There's an apology from the chair from the Committee on Trade and Industry. They have a meeting that is really scheduled to look at one of the legislation that they're processing today. So a full quorum is needed there, so hence the apologies for today's meeting. They have a knowledge of issues that we are dealing with today because we were together in the Eastern Cape during that oversight visit. Because we have visitors, I'm going to introduce members of my committee and also request the chair of health to also introduce members of her committee. And then as we hand over to both departments. I know that the Department of Trade and Industry will be the one that will be starting with their presentation. Will then introduce their delegation, as well as the Department of Health, which will do likewise. Pardon me, my voice is not okay. I've got flu. Let me start by introducing myself. My name is Matulare Coleman, the Chair of Economic Development Portfolio Committee. The members of this committee, we have the whip, Mr. Gele, that's the whip of the committee. Next to him is Mr. Tiani. Next to Mr. Tiani is Ubabu Mbata. And then just here next to me, Mme Ranto, who's also the member of this committee. I have apologies that I have received here from the committee. Mr. Atkinson will be joining us around 10, that's what he said. Mr. Mabika, who's not with us today, he's with the Portfolio Committee on Environment, which is on oversight as we speak. And Mema Zimbi, I heard yesterday that he's not well, but she hasn't submitted any formal apology to us. Yes, before I welcome and hand over to DTI to make the first presentation, may I also request the Chair to introduce us?
No, thank you, Chair. They usually say when you are grown, you must do it. With us, with the Portfolio Committee on Health, we allow members to introduce themselves. So we are invited, so we won't we'll do as you are directing us. I'm Lindelwa Tunjwa, I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Next to me, it's Dr. Maisele, who is a member of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Honorable Kobane, also member of health. Honorable Adams, member of health. Honorable, I don't know that they are not even making a sign for you people to know who is who. It's fine. Honorable Nkonzo is a member of Portfolio Committee on Health. And Honorable Mabanga, who's also our member of health, Portfolio Committee on Health. Next to him on the opposite side, behind the honorable member in front, is our committee secretary, Ms. Majalamba. Next to her is the Moses, who is part of the research team. At the back is Ms. Lindo Kuhle, who is our content advisor, and Zubair, who is also part of the research team. We have got two apologies. Our whip, who is not able to join us today, and one of our members, we had a bereavement. Mr. Mabanga is requesting to leave at 10:30. So when you see him leaving, not about anything else, it's about that. He has got the received a bereavement this morning, so she's requesting to leave early. Otherwise, that is that. The department will introduce itself. I see we've got members of the department with me, but they will have to introduce themselves. I'm sorry. The lady who's coming in is Mbali, who's our our committee assistant. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Chair. Unfortunately, our researcher is off sick. We have our secretary, Mr. Ben, is here, and my executive secretary, Ms. Williams. Those are the members of staff that we have. Just received an apology also from Honorable Bikinini. who's also with another portfolio committee on minerals, mineral resources. Here I'm given a list of delegation from the Department of Trade and Industry. We have Ms. Claudia Stain, who's the Chief Director. Chief Director, Chemicals, Plastics, Pharmaceuticals, and Cosmetics Sector. And may I hand over to you as the senior in the health, I mean in the trade and industry, to introduce your colleague and also indicate who's going to be giving the presentation. Just after I have also indicated who is from health. From health, it's led by Dr. Anne Van Pillay, the DDG Health Regulation and Compliance Management. He will also, when his time comes, will introduce his team. And hand over to Mr. Stay, Ma'am Stay.
Thank you for inviting us to be able to talk here today on the to give a presentation on the pharmaceutical sector in South Africa. And I'd like to introduce my colleague Swasi Sumaru, who's the Director for Pharmaceuticals and Medical Devices at the DTI. And Swasi will also be presenting to us on specifically on the landscape or an overview of a pharmaceutical sector, and then looking specifically at the challenges and the opportunities that we have so that we can grow and a sustainable pharmaceutical sector. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. So I have prepared a presentation and a brief set of notes for the various committees on the pharmaceutical sector. But what I've decided is that, so the slides are quite lengthy, so I may skip through some of them just in the interest of time, and you have copies in front of you, so you can go through them, and I think Dr. Pillay as well will cover some of the key slides. So just in terms of the sector, you know very well the South African pharmaceutical sector has been prioritized in terms of the National Development Plan in, from a healthcare perspective. And the Department of Trade and Industry's Industrial Policy Action Plan, which is our overarching guide in terms of industrial development priorities in the country. And pharmaceuticals, it has been, as well as medical devices, has been highlighted as priorities for sector development. That means that companies who are looking to invest in South Africa then get preferential treatment and access to some of the instruments that DTI has available to support industrial development. Okay, so the South African sector is valued approximately between 44 and 46 billion rands. Its contribution to GDP is marginal, it's less than 1%, and in terms of the global contribution to the global market, we add 0.4% in value and just above 1% in volume terms. The biologics industry is valued around 5 billion. And what we've seen recently, although it is a net import industry, more than 65% of what is required locally is imported. There is a growing trade deficit, but what we've seen in the last year is there's a slight drawback in the trade deficit. The slide that I'm presenting now is the various players across the pharmaceutical value chain. You see, in terms of South Africa, we have established capacity, formulation capacity, as well as some packaging capacity and limited capacity in terms of manufacturing the excipients and APIs that go into the finished product. So in this slide you'll see that we have a number of local companies, wholly owned South African companies such as Aspen and Adcock, and we have a number of other multinational players who feature as well, doing various levels of activity in the value chain, but predominantly South Africa is we have established formulation capacity and we're not vertically integrated across the value chain. Just a broad profile of the industry. So I said to you it's around 45 billion in 2015. The private sector accounted for more than 84% of the market by value, and the public sector around 16% of the market. The MCC is the regulatory body that governs where the companies are active in various spheres in South Africa, and there are around 270 or 280 companies licensed by the MCC. South Africa is predominantly a generic manufacturing industry, and we do also manufacture some of the branded generics. And you can see that that generics accounted for a bigger portion of the private and public market shares of procurement in terms of procurement. We exported around 4.9 million in 2015 and just over 5 billion in 2016. And as I said before, that two local companies dominate the industry, the manufacturing industry, that's Aspen and Adcock. So the market, in terms of the market structure, we've lost quite a few companies over the last 15 years or so. South Africa used to have 37 companies manufacturing or packaging locally, but due to a variety of reasons, which includes global strategy, a company strategy changes, these companies have exited the market. But at the same time, what we've seen is, although we've not seen a huge increase in the number of companies, we've seen an increase in the manufacturing volumes and the range of products that the companies are manufacturing locally. So at the moment we have around 23 local manufacturers, which includes your contract manufacturers. I'll skip through the other stuff because I think Dr. Clay may cover it, but generally the industry is regulated through MCC, so to be SAPRA, and various other regulatory bodies. Just in terms of transformation, this which preceded my time, that apparently there was an industry charter released in 2005, but unfortunately that did not materialize, and we as the DTI are engaging one of the new pharmaceutical industry associations called the Black Pharmaceutical Industry Association, and they represent black pharmaceutical companies in South Africa around mechanisms to revitalize that charter. The slide just gives you, in terms of the performance of the local companies, which include the multinationals, and you can see that the average growth rate for the top 20 companies in South Africa is around 9%. Local companies, domestic companies such as Aspen and Adcock and Sipra are lagging slightly behind at 6%. Whilst the multinationals are still performing at double-digit level, around 10%. This has been sourced from UTI Pharma. In terms of global exports of pharmaceutical products, South Africa ranked around 46 according to TradeMap, and that's, we represent 0.1% of the global share of the global market, and the Western countries dominate in terms of exports. In terms of our overall performance in imports of pharmaceutical products, we ranked around 42, 0.4% of the global share of the global market. And again, the Westernized nations are lead in this area. So this slide here is around our trade deficit over the last 15 years or so. And as you can see, there's been an increasing even though you know, we are, our exports have been increasing, they've been increasing marginally over the last few years, we're still net import dependent, largely because South Africa is not a vertically integrated country. Secondly, because you know, the volatility of the rand impacts the cost at which we buy the key active ingredients that go into, and the excipients that go into manufacture of the pharmaceuticals. But in 2016, we are seeing a slight clawback of around just over R1 billion in terms of finished dose forms. That's our heading 3004. And this is just then a representation of that. So you can see between 2015 and 2016, we've slightly clawed back on the trade deficit, largely because our exports have increased versus there's been a marginal movement in terms of imports, or change in terms of imports of 3004, which is your finished pharma. So I'm only giving you finished pharmaceutical data. I haven't given you the consolidated data that includes your biologic medicines and APIs. So this slide here is unfortunately one of the biggest worrying, biggest concerns for South Africa. It depicts that although we are seeing an upswing in the growth of the local industry, South African companies cannot compete against companies in India and China. And as you can see, India is where we source most of our pharmaceutical products, API and finished products, and we've seen an aggregate annual growth rate of around 29% in the last 5-6 years from India into South Africa, followed by some of the Western countries. Exports, in terms of exports, we generally export a larger portion to SADC and countries in the continent, and we've seen increasing growth rates for our exports into countries like Namibia and Botswana, and over the last few years there's been approximately a 23 or 24% growth of exports into the SADC region, and then there seems to be one of the reasons we think that the exports have increased into the US is because South African companies are compliant with GMP, the MCCs, a regulatory body is compliant with the WHO's good manufacturing practice standards, and that enables further exports into developed markets. At the same time, because our rand has depreciated against the dollar, we could potentially become a cheaper source of medicines into the Western world. So I'm going to skip the SWOT analyses. You can read through them at a later time. So there's several challenges that are facing the sector, and I think would be critical pillars into the sector's development. And to this extent, what DTI has done is that we started looking at what sort of what are some of the issues that that has led to some of these challenges, and what are the next steps in terms of addressing them. So you'll be aware that the skill shortage across the value chain is one of our biggest issues over the last few years. We've lost several skills, and one of the things relevant specifically to industrial development is making sure that we have enough or adequately trained industrial pharmacists. To this extent, a workshop was held in collaboration with UNIDO in 2015, and from that workshop we have taken the issues around us having a dedicated program around skills development to the Human Resources Development Council, to whom we managed to present only last week, having waited over a year to do so. And one of the things that the outcomes of that council is that the secretariat will then enable the departments to start working together to develop specific programs that are needed in line with the current curriculum. The second thing is around the currency weaknesses and the cost of the active pharmaceutical ingredients, and what we would need to look at and is in the plan is to develop a roadmap for South Africa to become a manufacturer of those active pharmaceutical ingredients where there may be strategic needs as well where the volumes would dictate the feasibility of doing so. And looking at it in a manner in which, given the environmental impact of the existing industries in countries like China and India, looking at the technologies that are coming through that are being developed around specifically marginalizing or reducing the impact into the environment, and one of those is the what we call continuous flow manufacturing. And the DTI is in the process of, or is at least, trying to support a company who has been supported through the IEC to conduct a bankable feasibility to look at how this can be done locally. And that company is partnered with a research institution in Germany to do so. The other issue is around the single exit pricing, which predominantly affects the private sector pricing and making sure that there's a mechanism in place and adequately look at how it adequately compensates local manufacturers for the increasing cost base, predominantly around importing APIs. In terms of tariff protection, the South African industry, the Finnish pharmaceuticals are not protected at all in terms of any tariffs. So you'll see that there's zero tariff protection on any of the Finnish products, but there is certain tariff protection in place in some of the APIs. But we've looked at the tariff book, as far as we can see, there's only around 3 APIs that attract any tariffs. So we're working with industry, specifically around some of those ones that have been highlighted to us, which is paracetamol and codeine, but I believe there's issues around codeine and the regulations of codeine, so we would not be able to look at that one in detail. Generally, South Africa has a bound tariff rate of around between 10% and 30%, and for TH3004, around 15%, so which means that we'd not be allowed to go above those boundaries. And we would need to work with Department of Health around which molecules we can apply tariffs to, so that there isn't any negative or unintended consequences around supplying cost of medicines. The first thing, though, we've engaged with SARS around breaking down the tariff headings from an 8-digit level to a 6-digit level to an 8-digit level, so that we get a better handle on what's being imported and what's being exported. And then the last thing is that a preferential procurement is one of the levers that DTI has identified as to assist the local growth of the industry. And pharmaceuticals is a designated sector, and we work with the Department of Health around designating specific tenders where there is manufacturing capacity. So I'm just going to skip the slide, but it briefly just gives you an indication of what the multipliers may be for, or the business case would be for local manufacturing. As you can see, one rand investment in pharmaceutical production results in 135 a multiplier in terms of the economy. Okay, so I've taken you through much of this, so I'm going to skip that slide. What we are doing as a DTI, there are a couple things. So we've done 4 briefing documents on those priority areas that we think that are of immediate concern to enabling the local manufacturers and to sort of giving them confidence that we are working towards sustaining these companies and developing policies that would be adequately receptive or enabling to local production. So those four have been done, those four policy briefs have been done, and the next step is moving from developing a framework and then moving that framework into an overarching industry development plan that has support across a number of government departments. Some of the projects that we're also involved in, which includes attracting biologic manufacturing into South Africa. And you will see that the Dubai Trade Port for Industrial Special Economic Zone has dedicated a specific zone around pharmaceutical medical devices, wherein they're establishing shared infrastructure to attract manufacturing of these products. And then there's various private sector projects in pharmaceutical formulation. Mylan is looking at an offset program with a local contract manufacturer to package ARVs locally. Sutla is looking at expanding the HIV, malaria, and HIV capacity, malaria capacity locally, and then moving to a new formulation of respiratory drugs. And Aurobindo is then also partnered with a local contract manufacturer to bring formulation of ARVs locally. So I'm going to skip this because it's been largely talked about. This is a slide on the DTI's industrial policy toolbox, and it just basically gives you an indication of the types of instruments that we have as the DTI available for use to support the local industry. We do not have a sector-specific incentive in the pharmaceutical sector. Most of the DTI's incentives are generic and support or give preference to priority sectors, which includes pharmaceuticals. And to date, just on the incentives, so one of the issues that has been raised with us previously is that DTI tends to support non-South African companies, but these incentives are there with generic guidelines to support certain criteria being achieved in the country in terms of capital investments, boosting manufacturing exports, and job creation. So there's not been any sort of preference given to any companies over and above other companies. Companies like Aspen and Adcock have received significant support from the DTI in the form of the previous SIP incentive as well as the 12i tax allowance. As I said, DTI has the designation instrument that we utilize to support industrial development, and we've utilized this instrument in a number of tenders with the Department of Health, we have previously designated the ARV HP 13 tender, which was done previous to my time, so Dr. Pillay will actually give you a little bit more information. But this is just a slide in terms of who our local manufacturers are at present. Haven't included Aurobindo or Mylan yet because those are works in progress. What we are doing is, as a basis for designation and for sector development strategy, we are trying to systematically collect local manufacturing capability data. We have approximately 40% progress has been made in terms of this database, and we are preparing for the upcoming ARV tender, which has been extended to 2019. And the information that we've collected thus far based on the current treatment regimen and not the new treatment regimen that is being proposed. So in terms of that designation of the current tender, the ARV tender, DTI has provided information to DOH in lieu of designation of the tender, and then I will just leave the rest because I think Dr. Pillay is covering some of it in his presentation. Just to say that in terms of value allocation to the local industry, four companies in South Africa received a part of the award, and the total value in terms of the percentage allocated to local companies was around 62%, and around in terms of numbers, rand value, 8.7 billion.
I'm going to skip those because he will cover it. And then HP09, which is the solid dose form tender we designated last year in 2016. As you can see, a number of companies were awarded the tender, but by volume and value, Aspen PharmaCare received around 28% of the tender. And in terms of overall allocation, there was a 50-50 split between local companies and companies that import. So I'll just skip that. And then the last one from the DTI, in terms of our supporting the fight against HIV and AIDS, we are also, it's a new priority area for us because inevitably the medical device and pharmaceutical industry go together, hand in hand together. So one of the areas around consumable devices, we've been supporting robustly through collaboration with National Treasury. And what we've been doing there is that, so the next tender estimated to be valued around $1.2 billion. We're working with National Treasury around making sure and local companies get preference and phasing in a larger portion to be awarded to local companies. And the intention is that in the first 3 years, local manufacturers get part of the tender, but as it moves to possibly a longer term tender, then bigger portions go to local manufacturers. So yeah, I think I've covered most of it. I know there was an issue around Aspen Pharmaceuticals and the Special Economic Zone in Port Elizabeth, and I think in terms of Aspen, they've requested from the DTI to be included in the ACOCA Special Economic Zone. One of the key reasons that they've asked for that is because they feel that the 12i tax allowance, it works on a point system, and if you are located in either industrial development zone or special economic zone, you would get afforded additional points that would count towards what percentage of the tax allowance you would get. So that's one of the reasons that they've asked, because 8 to 10 points affords you 100% tax allowance for your capital expenditure. But the DTI has been emphatic that we will not encourage or this is not something that we would approve, because many other pharmaceutical companies have invested in both manufacturing, job creation, technology upgrades, and if we allow this to Aspen, then we would unfortunately unlevel or create an imbalance in the playing field, and so that's why that specific request by Aspen has been rejected. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ma'am Sumaru, for the presentation. I guess after this presentation, we all have a clue what's going on in the pharmaceutical sector as a whole. I'm not sure how deep the understanding we have, but at least this information has helped us to have an insight into the work that they are doing as DTI in as far as pharmaceutical sector is concerned. We are now going to get a presentation from the Department of Health. I'll hand over to Dr. Pillay. While it's still preparing, I just want to indicate to members that this is just the tabling of the two presentations. I know that we are receiving the presentations for the first time here, and therefore we have not had time to really look at the documents. It will also be unfair to expect members really to ask smart or clever questions, because for the mere fact that we haven't yet really gone through the documents. So today we'll just allow it to be tabled and then ask questions for clarity. and I will arrange another joint meeting where the three committees will again meet and interact with the presentation. The visit was only to Aspen, but that was an intro to the industry itself. So it gave us just a little bit of info into what is really happening in the pharmaceutical. Before Dr. Pillay, let me hear what the chairperson is saying.
No, Chair, we have been joined by two, I'm assuming, members. I think it will be important that we are informed who are they. They are from your side, so that we don't. That's why I'm saying I'm assuming by virtue of where they are sitting that they are honourable members. But
remember, I indicated that Honourable Atkinson will join around 10 o'clock. He's here. Honourable Atkinson and Honourable Matsimbi, although we thought we were not going to be here, we're happy that you have joined us. Honourable Matsimbi is the lady there in black. They are both members of this team, of the ED team. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee on Health as well as Economic Development. I'm joined by colleagues from the National Department of Health. I'm Anbin Pillay. I'm the Deputy Director General of the National Department. I'll ask them if they can introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson and members. My name is Sikeledi Shabalala. I'm the Chief Director of Supply Chain from the National Department of Health.
Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Cindy Leswadlaka, Director and also Director General.
Good morning, Members. My name is Kawakas Kasama, Minister of Health.
Chair, while we're getting the presentation up with the technology challenges, if I can just start by a little bit of background relating to the antiretroviral tender. Just to say that you will remember that prior to 2009, access to antiretrovirals as government policy was fairly limited, in that we had a very limited antiretroviral access program. And so South Africa, as you know, was criticized across the world for limiting its access to ARVs. When government made a decision in 2009 that it needs to have widespread access to antiretrovirals and a rollout of ARVs across the country, we decided that we need to have a different plan about how we procure antiretrovirals. Because in 2008, when we started procuring antiretrovirals, we had huge problems in terms of the actual cost of ARVs. So in 2008, the three drug combination that's used for by 80% of the patients, which is tenofovir, lamivudine, and efavirenz, those are the three drugs. Those three drugs in 2008 cost us around 292 rands, and we then in 2010 realized that if we continue to pay these prices, the extent to which the fiscus is going to be affected is significant, and the health budget at the time would not be able to sustain such a rollout. So we introduced a number of measures to improve the procurement strategies for ARVs. So in 2010, we implemented that, and we then reduced the cost of the three-drug combination from the 292 rand we paid to 111 rand for the three drugs, which was basically a 62% reduction in the price of ARVs for those ARVs. Overall, in the tender from 2008 to 2010, it produced a 53% reduction, which was a 4.7 billion rand saving to the fiscus over the 2-year period. We subsequently, from 2010, then did next tender, which was in 2012. And that tender attempted to get the three drugs that were supplying to patients as individual tablets into a single drug, a single tablet. And that we did in the 2012 antiretroviral tender. And then in 2015, we went a little further and made sure that there were significant reductions in the cost of these of this triple drug combination. And just to share with you, in 2010, to give you a sense of the distribution of the wars at the time, Aspen Pharmacare had about 41% of the contract, and then Sonkei or Sun Pharmaceuticals at 22%. Cipla Medbro had 15%, and Abbott Pharmaceuticals 10%, and Adcock Ingram 4%. So overall, that was the distribution in 2010. Moving more specifically, Chair, now to what you're asking us to present on, which is the period from 2015 going forward, I can say in total the current estimated value of our state tenders are about 12.8 billion rand per annum. We currently use about 80 suppliers that supply these drugs to the state, and these are crossover 1,000 line items that we buy. Just to give you a sense, in the private market, there are about 161 registered manufacturers that supply medicines through the private sector. I think it's important to understand a little bit about this local production and what it means, etc., so that we have a sense of what we're talking about. Because often when people talk about local production in the country, there's some confusion about exactly what we mean. So I think it's important to recognize that every country will always start at level one. And level one is where a country will be importing pharmaceuticals from whoever is producing them in bulk and at an affordable price. And many countries fit into this category of an importer simply because they do not have the capacity to produce locally. Your island states would be a typical example where they would not have local pharmaceutical production. They would effectively be net importers of pharmaceuticals, not a commodity. They will be able to produce, given the infrastructure as well as the burden of disease. The second is a level two pharmaceutical manufacturing, which is where we talk about packaging and labeling. And this simply is where drugs are bought in bulk. They are repackaged into more suitable sizes, and they are labeled in-country. Now, South Africa has significant capacity in this area. I can give you an example. The BioVac Institute, which produces vaccines, actually buys vaccines in bulk and repackages it into smaller vials, which is the vaccines that are then distributed across the country. And they relabel it here. Now, packaging and labeling, for example, in the case of vaccines, requires significant skill and technology, so it's not simply a case of just transferring from a large container into a smaller container. The infrastructure capacity and skill is quite significant. Then we move to a level three, which is the next level, and this requires product manufacturing, or in pharmaceutical terms is called formulation. And formulation involves taking the different ingredients that will make up a particular tablet and putting these ingredients together into the tablet to produce a solid dose of a tablet. So in any tablet that you consume, there will be the active pharmaceutical ingredient, which is the drug that actually enters your bloodstream and produces a particular effect. And there are other things which are called excipients. These are products that actually support the drug while it's in that dosage form and allows the drug to be released either in the stomach or the small intestine. And in the case of injectables, obviously it would stabilize the drug within the solution until it enters the blood vessel, etc. Other products such as inhalers have different excipients. So formulation is an important step in the pharmaceutical value chain. Then moving upstream, the next level will be what we call active pharmaceutical ingredient manufacture. This is the actual drug. And this is largely, in most cases, a chemical process, and it requires many steps in the chemical manufacture of a particular drug. Not many countries have a capacity to produce active pharmaceutical ingredients. simply because it requires huge capital investment and huge expertise, particularly in the chemical engineering field, in order to be able to produce this. Globally, China is probably the central country that produces active pharmaceutical ingredients for the world. Many countries that have active pharmaceutical ingredient capacity would usually use China as the first one. So if a drug requires 20 chemical steps, they may decide to buy from China after the first 10 chemical steps and do the following 10 steps in country. And so the active pharmaceutical ingredient production is centralized in only a few countries. And then even further up the chain is the level 5 in terms of the value chain, which is research and development. This is drug discovery, trying to do what we call phase 1 work, where you try to identify a molecule or a drug that would be able to produce an intervention that would change the outcome of a particular disease. Generally speaking, one would expect a country to move from level 1 up the chain. As you get expertise in level 1, you move to level 2 and level 3 and so on. Not many countries have been able to achieve all of these for the reasons I've outlined. So coming to some of the factors that affect the production of pharmaceuticals, I think firstly and most importantly is access to appropriately skilled persons to develop the production capacity. The production of pharmaceuticals is not an easy process, and the barriers to entry are high, largely because the capital outlay to be able to set up a pharmaceutical plant is significant, and the risks relating to the production of pharmaceuticals in that the batch failures. So if you have produced a batch of pharmaceuticals and they do not meet the standards, those batches have to be discarded, which means that all of the costs linked to it have to then be lost. And it's very difficult to predict the outcome in advance until you actually produce the batch and it's tested. The pharmaceutical sector is highly regulated globally. So like we have the Medicine Control Council in South Africa, and many countries there are similar regulators that require that every batch is tested before it's actually released from a factory. Vaccines are a particular risk in terms of production, because vaccines are biological products and they require manipulation of live organisms, bacteria and the like, in order to produce a vaccine. And the outcomes of that type of production sometimes vary. So batch failures are high. So you will find in the case of vaccines that globally the number of new vaccine manufacturers has not increased significantly, largely because people perceive the risks as being too high and the consequences is that they don't enter the market. Secondly is the physical infrastructure, largely around access to your infrastructure, water, electricity and the like, as well as the equipment to be able to produce these pharmaceuticals. As I was saying, it's a highly regulated sector, so the regulators require particular quality of equipment in order to produce this. And so not everybody can purchase this equipment, and this equipment is largely not available in country. So for example, South Africa doesn't produce the equipment for producing pharmaceuticals. It would have to be imported, and the capital investment to do that is quite high. Thirdly, and I think the obvious one, is that you need to have a burden of disease in the market that you intend selling it. There's no point producing a drug that there's no market for it in your country. Fourthly, I think the standards that are adopted by the national medicine regulator are important. Fortunately, in South Africa is amongst the global leaders in terms of standards for pharmaceutical production. We are members of what is called PICS, which is an inspection cooperation between many of the developed countries in Europe, the U.S., Japan, Australia, etc., which means we have mutual agreements. So if South Africa inspects a pharmaceutical plant and considers the plant to be of acceptable standard, then the United States and Europe and those countries that are part of PICS will then accept our report and not come to do a similar inspection, because we've adopted similar standards about how we do that. The advantage of this for the local manufacturer is that he or she would have easier access to many of those markets, simply because those regulators need not come to South Africa to be able to inspect our plants. then I think there is a need for economic incentives and there are disincentives. And I think balancing both the incentives and disincentives are important in order for local manufacture to occur. And then duties and import controls play an important part. One of the strategies many countries have used is that if you want to promote local formulation, then you make sure that your tariffs and duties on the ingredients that are used for the formulation are lowered so that it would be cheaper to produce the product in country than to have it imported from another market. And then finally, I think collaborative partnerships are critical for the local production. Very often, companies want to produce products which they don't have the expertise. So partnering with other companies, particularly the multinational innovative companies, to be able to share that technology transfer is critical. And a few of our companies in South Africa have been able to develop these partnerships and have been able to produce quite a few drugs like that. So moving specifically to the 2015 tender, there are effectively five areas that we use for the awarding of the tender. The first is administrative criteria, which is basically in regulations from Treasury and good practice. And there are a variety of SBD forms that must be completed, the triple BEE certificates, etc. And those compliance requirements are the first step in making sure that any bidder is compliant. Secondly, the supplier of the medicine must be registered with the Medicine Control Council, which means that we cannot have a supplier that is not registered and intending to supply into the South African market, simply because the MCC will assess the quality of the product, as well as assess the plant where the product is being purchased from in terms of formulation and the plant where the API comes from. Then there is a technical evaluation as well, where we look at the capacity of the plant to produce the product. We've often had the experience where we've had stockouts because companies accept a tender with huge volumes, and then after receiving these orders, they realize that their plant actually cannot produce the volumes that they've accepted. So we upfront do an assessment of the company's capacity to produce and in many cases have to reduce the volume that we'd award to them. Although they're offering us at a very attractive price, they're not able to produce the entire volume. So we'd have to split the volume amongst other suppliers. The second is the security of supply of the active pharmaceutical. As I was mentioning earlier, the active pharmaceutical ingredient is produced only in a few plants across the world. If we are splitting a tender, for example, amongst two or three manufacturers, and all three of them are drawing the active pharmaceutical ingredient from the same company, if that company has a strike, a fire, a breakdown, etc., that means that South Africa will not have access to any drug because the API will not be available. So what we try and do is try identify which is the API source and make sure there are different API sources. So if company X API source goes down, we're able to then get it from another source. And that helps us in terms of the continuity of supply. Thirdly, the price reasonability. Very clearly, we look at the previous tender price and look at the price escalation against that. We look at the single exit price in the country. We also look at the international price for the particular product when a bid is. We use the 90-10 preference point system in the 2015 tender in order to award, and we afforded preference to local manufacturers. So I'll talk a little bit about that. So in terms of the local manufacturer, we sat down with the colleagues in DTI and tried to identify which products are locally produced. And those products that were locally produced were then listed, and we had indicated in the tender that we would give preference to local manufacturers for these products. One difficulty, though, in providing preference is we're not able to pay a significantly higher price for these products simply because it would then mean it would erode into the health budget, which we want to try and use to roll out ARVs to all patients. So what we do is we offer the pharmaceutical company that's within 10% of the point an opportunity to match the best price that's available to us so that they would then be able to participate in the tender. So the following conditions were applied, where the bids for products that qualify for this preference must comply with the requirements in terms of MCC certification. They should be below the reference price. they must have the capacity clearly to be able to supply. They must be within 10% of the highest points available and comply with all of the other conditions around the special conditions of contract that are outlined in the document. So as I was mentioning earlier, we split tenders. We split tenders particularly for products that are high volume and high risk, where the risk may be that one particular supplier will not be able to supply, and the consequence of which is that if patients don't get that particular drug, there will be serious consequences. So we can split tenders, and we've done that to split the tender two ways, meaning to two manufacturers, so three ways amongst three. And in the case of the fixed-dose combination, we've actually split the tender four ways. And what I've shared with you on the slide is the formula that we use to split amongst two, three, and four ways. The logic behind the formula is simply that when you're splitting tenders, it's important that each of the recipients have a reasonable, economically viable volume in order to produce. So there's no point as awarding a tender to a company with 3% of the volume, because it would not be feasible from an economic perspective to have produced such a small volume. So the volume that they're going to be able to produce must be reasonable in order for them to participate in the tender. So moving now to the 2015 tender, and I'm comparing that to the 2013 tender, and what you will see is a significant increase in the value of the tender. That's largely because the 2015 tender as well has been for 3 years, and now we're going to extend it by one additional year. And what you see in the yellow are the companies that were awarded the tender in 2015 that are locally produced. So it's important to differentiate between locally produced and locally owned. So Sonke, for example, is now known as Sun Pharma. They've acquired a plant, a BTAPS plant, which was a formulation plant which they have revamped and put in significant capital to improve. And then PharmaCare is Aspen PharmaCare, they're known as PharmaCare. And then MedPro Pharmaceuticals previously was a wholly owned subsidiary of Cipla, and they're now known as Cipla MedPro, and that's the formulation capacity which exists in Durban. And then finally, Adcock Ingram, which also has formulation capacity, fairly significant formulation capacity, and they're based in Johannesburg. In fact, the formulation capacity of Adcock Ingram is recognized by the Food and Drug Administration, which means that they do have the capacity to export to the U.S. if they had such a contract. So you will see from the 2013 to 2015 that these companies have had a significant part of the tender. Around 62% of awards in terms of value have gone to these locally produced products. So you will also notice companies such as Abbott and MSD. Now these companies produce products that no other company is able to produce, and we have to procure from only one company globally. In fact, there's only one supplier of these products. It's a niche product for these companies. The other generic manufacturers have shown no interest or capacity to be able to do that. So just an overview of the awards from a product perspective. There were 32 line items that were awarded on tender. These are for the ARVs. Of these 32 items, the one product, the fixed-dose combination I spoke about, which consists of three drugs, the tenofovir, the efavirenz, and the emtricitabine, constituted 72% of the value of this tender. So it's the biggest item. The others are fairly small. And that makes up about 10.2 billion rand of the 2015 tender. So this contract, as I indicated, was split amongst four suppliers. Three of those four suppliers are locally produced suppliers. The only supplier that's not is Mylan Pharmaceuticals. And Mylan Pharmaceuticals is the only one that's importing their product. The majority of the awards that were locally produced at 67%. The awards for the imported products, as I indicated earlier, are largely because they were sole bidders in those cases, simply because globally they're the only suppliers of these products, so we have to accept those products from those suppliers. terms of contractual obligations post-tender, pharmaceutical companies have to make sure that they honor the orders that are placed on them. So once a contract is concluded at the national department, that contract is then the basis on which provincial departments of health order and pay for medicines, and medicines are then delivered to the provincial departments of health. We at the national department monitor the ordering, the delivery, and the payment of pharmaceuticals. As I said earlier, one of our big risks is around security of supply, where manufacturers do not deliver the full quantities that are ordered against them. And so we monitor this very closely. We also monitor issues such as the packaging, labeling, and shelf life. Sometimes manufacturers try to give us product with a very short expiry, and then we have to intervene and make sure that we have sufficient expiry, because the consequence of a short expiry is obviously that we have to discard those products if they are not used in time. We've put in place a early warning system to monitor these supplies and this information. The early warning system basically extracts the orders that have been placed against a particular manufacturer for each product. The production of product from the company's factory and the deliveries against that product that are available in the provincial warehouses, so that we can map that information out. And that gives us an early warning signal that any particular product from any particular company is at risk because the orders exceed the production capacity, and the province is currently not sitting with sufficient stock, and we're looking at a potential stock out situation. So this is an example of that type of information. We basically produce a scorecard. The intention of the scorecard is first to highlight to ourselves where we need to intervene, also to highlight to the company, because very often the information around ordering and supply is done by the supply chain people within the company. The CEO and the like may not be aware of it, and so this information gets sent to the CEO so that he or she can intervene so that they can supply this product timely given their contractual obligations. So the scorecard has got three categories. The G is a good category, and G basically means that when we ordered a product, that the entire volume of the product was supplied in full the first time. So if we ordered 100 units, the 100 units of the product was delivered in a single delivery. A, which is average, means that the company delivered the 100 units, but it didn't deliver it in a single delivery. They maybe delivered the second order after a week or two, etc. Which obviously does pose some risk to ourselves, largely because if the stock holding or the utilization within the facility is high, you can run a risk of a stock out. And then P, which is poor, means that the supplier has not delivered the entire quantity that was ordered, and it forced us to then go to other manufacturers in order to pick up those volumes. So the purpose of this is, firstly, as I said, as an early warning for us to alleviate stock outs, but we also use it as a tool for future tenders. So when a company puts in a bid for the same product in the next tender, we then say to the company, given your poor performance in supplying this particular product, what confidence do we have that even though you may have a great price, you're not able to supply, and so it's a problem in terms of us accessing this medicine. So we use the tool also for that purpose. And then finally, Chair, just to share with you the information around the price changes, particularly for the fixed dose combination medicine, because manufacturers of medicine, particularly the formulation aspects, require that they purchase the active ingredient and the excipients from an API source overseas, like I said, China and the like, which means that they have to trade in foreign currency. So the companies are exposed to the variance in the exchange rate. At the point of us awarding the tender in 2015, the rand was sitting at 10 rand 74. And based on that exchange rate, the companies put in a bid. But companies and us understand that the currency varies. And if the currency deteriorates, the company would be carrying the risk. And the consequence over the years has been that companies just stop supplying because It's just too much of risk for them to be purchased, supplying at a price that is less than actually the cost of their goods. So we've agreed that they are transparent with us and they give us a detailed breakdown of each product that they buy and how much they pay for it in foreign currency. We then agree to give them an adjustment on the foreign currency so that it's equivalent to their true cost of purchase. And so they give us that upfront at the beginning of the tender, and we agree on 6 monthly intervals to give them adjustments on that price. We also agree that if the currency deteriorates significantly over a short period, that they also have a cash flow risk. So ordinarily we would be doing the 6 months, but if the currency deteriorates significantly, so it falls by 15-20% over a short period, we would then do an adjustment at 3 months. So what you see in the table below the graph is the adjustment period called CPA 1. CPA 1.1 was an extraordinary adjustment, 2.1 as well, and then 3.1. So the different colors on the graph refer to the different companies. The first one is Cipla Medpro, and you'll notice that Cipla Medpro in the graph basically, when they awarded the tender, they came in at a price at 109 rands for the fixed dose combination. And similarly, Mylan supplied it at 102 rands, Aspen Pharmacare at 104 rand, and Sonka, which is now known as Sun Pharma, at 101 rand. And then there were adjustments over the period. What you'll also see is that the prices that the companies are now selling at differ from the beginning, largely because of the price adjustments, and some companies are a little bit cheaper than the other companies than what they were at the beginning of the tender. We have also, through the tender period, exceeded our volumes in terms of what we had anticipated we'd be purchasing, and some companies have indicated that they will not be able to take on more volumes, so we've had to transfer some volumes. So specifically in the case of Aspen Pharmacare, they've not been keen to take on additional volume in the case of the fixed dose combination. So we've had to use one of the other three suppliers to take on the additional orders that are available on contract as we exceed some of the volumes for this product. Chair, I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Pillay. I think members will agree with me now that after that visit, especially those from the Economic Development Portfolio Committee. Now, we, with the two presentations, we have managed to get at least the three sides of the story. The one from the actor, which is the pharmaceutical industry, the regulators, and also from the DTI, which is responsible for creating the and managing the industry itself. With this information, you might ask, why have we called, you know, these two departments, and why have we invited the Health and Trade and Industry Portfolio Committee? This was to ensure that when we deal with this particular matter, when we engage and discuss and look at possible solutions, we need to do that in a coordinated manner so that all of us as stakeholders are able to advise as to what we think could be the possible solution. Because yes, we have to listen to the industry. We also have to listen to government as legislators, so that at the end of the day, we come with a balanced view or recommendation to the legislature. So that is the intention. Having listened to the two departments and having a report in front of you that we prepared in 2015, I guess now you are able to have a clear understanding of what's happening in this sector. Please, as I indicated earlier on, we are just going to ask questions for clarity purposes. I know there were a lot of questions then, Dr. Bile, related to this tender, the 2015 tender. But I'm not too sure whether members will still have those questions today after this presentation. But I will give an opportunity for members to ask questions for clarity. Then the discussions will have them later on. I'm opening the floor now. Stadkinson. I'll ask. No. I don't want to keep the same part. I'll Babumbata, Ndate Tliane, and then I'll end with.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Dr. Pele, for your presentation as well. Just a question to you. You've spoken about the 2013 and the 2015 tenders. When is the next one? Because obviously you need to do it in over a period of 2 or 3 years. Is there one in 2017 or 2018 coming up? I was just wondering if you have anything to report to us about that future tender as well. Thank you. About the possible cost and the people that you'll be using. Thank you.
Thanks. I don't know whether you want to also to participate in the tender. Do you want to participate in the tender? That was on a lighter note. Babu Bacha?
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning to everyone. I just want to direct my question to DDR. Your industrial policy is just going through what maybe are the wishes of the department. My take is we know the strength of the disease in South Africa, and we know that over a period, we even have statistics that it's going to be with us for a longer period of time. And the World Health Organization has projected that we will probably reduce the scale of our purchase around about 2040, because they assume that there has been new prevalence, and also we seem to sustain the lives of those who have entered the system early, which means that the life expectancy rate is extended beyond 65 and 70, which means the purchase power of government is extended. Now, you know very well that you cannot contest majority of the current providers there. And you know that as a government, in your industrial strategy, you must have better friends. How are you intending to shift the future purchase strategy in favor of countries that will allow us to even formulate partnerships with them, 50-50 state, 50 private, because it is highly unsustainable that if we go the way it is currently, that by 2040 we will be purchasing at these prices, and with the Department of Health price, I would say, support to the currency, for instance. I'm not fighting what we are doing, but I'm saying doing currency support is actually unusual in Africa. In Africa, it's pay as you go. You get in at your price, you safeguard your price, and you get out of at the price that you provided. Most African countries do not shift around price in accordance with the markets or the currency issues. Now, as part of your strategy, DTI, which one is sustainable to you? Is it getting involved at the government level, maybe to redeem a percentage, maybe with the local supplier, or maybe draw in the Indian type where the government got in with local suppliers at the 60-40 ownership, and they pushed the balance of what was sustainable as in their country, and also they ended up supplying two continents at full blast. Because I seem not to get that you understand that these monies are not going to be available for a longer period of time.
Yeah, you're asking a question, not giving your opinion. I'm
a policy maker, Chair, so I should be able to understand
myself. But let them clarify first, and then you will then follow up if you want to. Thanks. Dr. Tliani?
Oh, thank you very much, Chairperson. Let's take this opportunity to appreciate both presentations. We also agree with the two chairpersons that indeed this is very critical and complex information that we've received today, that we need a little bit of more time to imbibe and process the information so that later on when we engage very constructively. Just a few questions for clarity, Chairperson, starting with Dr. Pillay. I see that on the scorecard, G stands for good performance, but we only see the P's and the A's there. Does the P now replace the A, the G, because there is no G there? The second question for clarity is for the DTI, for Ms. Sumaru. The presentation speaks of lack of adequate, there is a lack of adequate incentives across the pharmaceutical value chain. Now the question would be, what is the adequate incentives? And what incentives are we providing at the moment for us to say it is inadequate? And the last one is uncertainty in policy, in the policy environment. And you are citing the example of intellectual property policy there and then tender frameworks. Can you perhaps just speculate a little bit what that implies, especially in relation to the IP policy? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, let me start with the trade industry. The presentation is very good, Chair, but for some of us who saw the document for the first time, it's a lot of abbreviation here, if maybe in future, so that, because I believe that communication is a two-way, but when you use most of the abbreviation, you couldn't follow up certain things, what do you mean? Chair, with regard to, according to the presentation of trade and industry, it clearly says that 276 companies are licensed with the Department of Health and with the Medicine Control Council. Can you please maybe can tell us how many of those are private, others are state-owned, if you can just tell private and the public one, if you can explain that to us. Chair, what is nice about the presentation here, it clearly there's a SWOT analysis in terms of what are the problems and everything. But I was expecting more to have at least something that tells us when are they going to resolve this, some sort of an action plan. These are the problems. How are we going to resolve this? This is a time frame. I couldn't see much of that. What is also worrying me, Chair, one thing that is also a challenge, they talk about the skill shortages here. And it clearly says South Africa, we need about 12,000 pharmacists to meet the international benchmark. But I'm sure it's not something also that lies with them only alone. Have we ever tried to have a discussion with the department
Department of Higher Education, Health Professional Council, how do, are we going to achieve or to arrive to all what is in ready? I'm just worried about the challenges that are mentioned, but I don't see the how part of resolving to it. That's my only worry. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Olegiti. Let me also appreciate the two presentations. On the challenges raised by the DTI to further develop the sector, I also see them identify the challenges, but I'm not seeing them coming up with a plan to respond to the identified challenges. For instance, on the issue of the absence of integrated plan, they say there's no meeting between two relevant government departments, especially on local production and pharmaceutical. Now, one would say, whose responsibility is that to ensure that the two government departments, the relevant ones, are meeting? Because if they have realized that, who should make it a point that they are meeting to have that integrated plan? I see them identifying challenges, but I don't see them coming up with what are their plans to respond to the challenges that they have identified. Thank you.
Thanks, Nama. Is there any other? Okay. Chair?
No, thank you, Chair. I will, but my focus of the question, as much as it has been asked, it's on skills. Because I believe in, we can ask questions here, we can crack our skulls, but in the center is skills in this country. And at times we are seen as the African National Congress running away from responsibility, but as health, we know that we have taken over a sector that had serious challenges in terms of skills right across in the skills in the sector. And therefore, I want to check both with the Department of Health and the DTI that in the sector, where are we lacking? And how best do you think the country can move forward in terms of the skills in this industry? The second question for the Department of Health is in terms of, well, I'm not well versed with the tendering issues, but this question is prompted by what you have said in terms of the capacity of this. If I can make an example, for instance, in human settlement, there is a follow-up if a person is building a house in terms of the specifications that he or she said when he was submitted. I'm reading in between lines, and you will correct me, that as much as the companies have got capacity, you don't follow up, you don't visit, if I can. I'm a layman in terms of tenders. You don't visit to really see that if they say they are going to be able to produce this, they are not. I'm raising that question because of these two. There's not a single company here that has got a G. And we are treated as health with a huge challenge of drug stockouts. Now, have you, as the Department of Health, made a follow-up to say, but you said you're going to be able to do this, and you're not doing that? So that's where my question is. Do you have a capacity and a strategy to follow up some of these? I just wanted to make this comment, Chair, because you will close that. I do think that it is really going to be important that you receive a... This is a highly technical sector. We must not take it for granted. It's highly technical. It's got a level of confusing, not deliberate though. But we do think that it's going to be important that both these three departments these three portfolio committees, we do have, we have again a day that we're going to sit and have it. It's just unfortunate that we were not part. We didn't have a joint oversight when economic development visited Aspen, and we are more, we are dependent on the report, whereas with them they have also has got an added advantage of having visited Aspen. So that's why the question is, I think it's going to be important that we have a, I agree with the chair that this is for clarity seeking questions, which is going to, but I'm of the view that we need to unpack this this presentation, because it's not about anything else, it's about ensuring that our people get the drugs on time without any challenges in people that are then supposed to do that. I, those were my clarities and comments, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. May I also ask a clarity-seeking question? I think both, you both alluded to the sort of a response plan to these challenges. Might, I think DTI is calling it a turnaround strategy, but at the same time, around pharmaceutical industrial development plan. You also have a development plan, I mean a response plan, and you are saying you are going to be going again into a tender, and that tender will obviously look at, you know, use the experiences gained already. I take it that you won't be able to repeat the same mistakes that you had before. And but then my challenge is the factors that are affecting the local production are still in place, and they will remain in place when I look at them, because they are not just immediate and medium-term kind of challenges that you might wake up tomorrow and they are gone. One of them, the skills factor, and the others is the volatility of the rent vis-a-vis the dollar and so forth. And those are challenges that you cannot wake up tomorrow and end. The issue now is DTI, you want to develop the industry. And when you develop that kind of industry, obviously you need this two issues to take these issues into consideration. I'm not sure when this plan was developed. How far are you now? I think members have asked that question. But perhaps we'd want to understand as time goes on in our next engagement as to how far have you gone and what do you think are the best solutions or possible solutions. They might not be best, but rather possible solutions to the challenges that we are facing. And if we need, because one of the issues as raised by Mema Tsimbi is that of collaboration with other stakeholders. How then are you going to ensure that you utilize that the effort to ensure that you mitigate some of these challenges as different stakeholders? Because I believe that if you jointly tackle a challenge, you are able to have a greater impact, unlike if you do it on a silo basis. The DTI has put a huge amount of money towards black industrial and development of black industrialism. Even though managed by IDC, but I believe that I just don't know as to whether this particular industry is benefiting from that, and how ready are we? I know that there's a in terms of higher education and the Department of Health and the Department of the one of Science and Technology. There is something that they are planning towards health in this particular sector, but I'm not seeing that kind of interaction among the stakeholders coming out here to convince us that you are tackling this matter in a collaborative manner. So I think these are some of the questions that, as you come back, would want to be clarified on, so that we are convinced, or we stand convinced that you are really taking the issues very seriously. As I indicated, the reason that made us to go and visit CIPLA is because in our new growth path, and in the IPEP again, and the NDP, there is a mention of pharmaceutical industry as a lever, one of the levers that can fast track the creation of jobs, can fast track also the growth, our economic growth. If we don't focus on those things, we might experience further challenges in terms of growth in our country, because we don't seem to be taking advantage of what we have in place. So having come back, it is upon us, or incumbent upon us as a portfolio committee or portfolio committees, to ensure that we sensitize you to this particular matter and the challenges that the sector itself feel they are challenged around. I'm happy that members have asked this question. If you want to respond to some of them now, you have an opportunity to do so now. And if you feel you are not able to give immediate responses, you also welcome to indicate to us so that you can come back on the date that we're still going to announce after consulting with other committees. Chair, before you come in, Chair, yes.
No, thank you, Chair. I would be very much interested if it's possible to be exposed to this charter which was developed by DTI, whether it's within the Department of Health or it's with you, the 205 charter that you said is not yet materialized. We will think that it's also going to be very important, so I just want to check if it's possible that we are also exposed to that electricity committee.
Thank you. Handing off, Ma'am Kupan.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to find out some of the companies, that the pharmaceutical companies that are mentioned here. I think some few weeks ago they appeared before the Competition Commission. So how is the investigation affecting what you are talking about? How far is the investigation? If maybe we can have a clarity on that. Is there any relation to the what is being investigated to this matter at hand?
Yeah, I don't think these two departments are really competitive towards that. They won't be able to give you that. I know, because we have asked as the EDD, Economic Development Committee, I know there's something that is currently being processed by the competition authorities, and I think for now we should leave it there until they pronounce on the outcome of that, then we can be. We have other issues, for instance, LPG, that we also want to join this committee on the LPG. It's also processed. That has been processed by the Competition Commission. There will be others that are under the Competition Commission, and or even others. It can be ITEC or whatever that you feel will need that collaboration with yourselves to look at. We'll do so when the time comes. But for now, we had called this just for this one. I know that the matter is still being processed, and I would plead that we leave it there. don't know if you're ready for response.
My colleague from DGI agrees, of course. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the questions. I think firstly, to talk about the next tender, we have been anticipating how we plan the next tender. Some of the developments in the antiretroviral drug development will probably influence the way we structure the next tender. So there is a new antiretroviral called dolutegravir, which will replace one of the three drugs that we're using. The advantage of dolutegravir is it is used in a smaller dose and will obviously cost less and will be a smaller size tablet. Currently, the companies are busy formulating it in order to get it registered with our Medicine Control Council. So we are anticipating extending the current tender so that those products will be ready, because what we didn't want to do was award another 3-year tender. Then dolutegravir, which is a superior drug clinically as well as in terms of price, comes on the market, but we can't buy it simply because we already awarded a tender for an older drug. So we're trying to time the tender so that these drugs are ready for us to purchase, because it's going to be cheaper than the drugs that we have now from all our estimates on what it would be. So we're just waiting for those developments to be finalized. So most of two or three of the companies have already developed the product and submitted it to the MCC, and they're busy doing the evaluations. And once those products are then registered, we can then say, well, we're going to then develop the tender around those products, because I think it'll be significant for patients as well as for costs for us. So the second issue around the scorecard, if I can call it that, the scorecard is based, as I said, on whether you deliver all your stock in full. So where you see the A's, it means they deliver the stock, but not the first time. And what we do is we have a team of at least 6 people sitting in the national department who monitor the suppliers of all drugs. So every time there is a P or an A, the companies have contacted and we then move volumes around. And we do this on a daily basis. I gave you a snapshot of antiretrovirals, but I can give you a similar picture for tablets, for injections, etc. So from time to time, manufacturers have problems in the supply, and one has to be quick to react to get another supplier to produce. And so this requires close monitoring on a day-to-day basis. So there are very few companies that are able to get G's, to be quite honest. Their ability to supply the volumes that the state uses in time is a problem. Actually, if you look at your private pharmacy that you go to, I'm not sure how many people have experienced the problem where they go to a private pharmacy and the medicine that they need is not available, and they'll say to you, I'll deliver it to you tomorrow or whatever. Because these are production problems that companies have from time to time. For a variety of reasons, the companies have these problems. So we try and manage this internally so that there's no stock out by having a team that watches this early warning system. The question around intellectual property policy, from our perspective, a lot of the antiretrovirals are patent protected. And ordinarily, South Africa would not have had access or been able to roll out these antiretrovirals at the extent that we had these IP policies been in place. However, there has been global agreement that antiretrovirals are of public health interest, and one cannot assert one's patent on products such as antiretrovirals. So many of the patent holders have got into voluntary licenses with our local manufacturers to be able to produce this product. And we as the department, together with an organization called the Medicines Patent Pool, have facilitated these transfers of licenses. So in other words, a license holder globally will license a local manufacturer in South Africa and say, I'm giving you a license to produce this product in South Africa, and you will be able to produce in this market without me asserting my patent. Because if they hadn't done that, we would have to basically buy from that patent holder at a price which may be, you know, 10 times the current price that we're paying. And so clearly, because of the global agreements around public health interests, we've been able to assert those voluntary licenses. So it's working very well for antiretrovirals. It's probably in the other areas that the challenges exist, because in the case of ARVs and maybe TB drugs, this works well, but in the case of other diseases like cancer drugs, for example, companies are not as willing to share their IP with other local manufacturers so that these products can be produced locally. So I think that's where IP policy will probably become more relevant. In terms of state-owned companies, there are no state-owned companies currently registered or producing any product with the MCC at this stage. Well, I suppose the closest we come to that is Biovac, but it's not fully state-owned. It's partly owned by the Department of Science and Technology, not fully owned. The question around a skills shortage, yes, there's a huge skills shortage in South Africa. If you look at the area around formulation, one would argue that the scientists that are required, particularly a formulation chemist, to be able to produce formulated product is a critical aspect. And currently in the country, I would argue that none of our universities have the capacity to produce these skills to be able to support them. So if you go to any of the big local manufacturers that have local presence, whether it's Aspen or Cipla Medpro or Sun Pharma, all of them bring Indian nationals in who then train South Africans. They usually come here like for 18 months or 2 years, train South Africans, and then they leave, because locally they cannot get the skill, and the cost of labor in South Africa is much higher than there, and so they bring people to come and train them here. But what would be ideal is we had our own training program for people rather than having to rely on companies to do that for their own particular arrangements. I think on the API formulation side, chemical engineers are a critical aspect. And if we look at a country like India, which probably it's globally known that India is seen as the pharmacy of the world, as they call it, largely because of the amount of drugs that they produce for global consumption, they produce a lot of chemical engineers with a deliberate strategy that they will be involved in pharmaceutical production. But here, if you added up our chemical engineer production out of our universities, they would not come close to anything what the Indians have been able to produce. So I think in at a broad level, we have to agree that we want to take the pharmaceutical sector and prioritize it. And each of the departments need to then play their part in terms of supporting that strategy. So if you went to Department of Higher Education and asked, well, what incentives do you have for universities to train more chemical engineers for the pharma sector? They're not aligned to that. They're not aware of the policy, and they're not necessarily aligned to it. Not because they have any objection, but largely because they're not aware of the strategy. So I think it needs coordination and everyone looking in the same direction. I also think it's important for us to look at some of these lessons on pharmaceutical production that some of the most successful countries have been able to achieve, like India, and look at India's policy around special economic zones. So if you go to India, you would not find pharmaceutical plants all over in every city. They're in special economic zones. So in two or three streets in Hyderabad, you find all of the major pharmaceutical manufacturers. They've put in all of the infrastructure required for pharmaceutical production in a small area, and all of them come to that area and they get special benefits and privileges for operating in those areas in India. So we could certainly be considering that as one aspect. The second is around what is referred to as incubators. I mean, the Indian pharmaceutical industry developed out of the Indian strategy of establishing what's known as NIPA, the National Institute for Pharmaceutical Excellence and Research, where incubation happens in this organization. That's the state-owned pharmaceutical entity that then supports state production. But they then are encouraged to become entrepreneurs, and that's where the staff of your Cipla Medpro and your Rambaxis and the like all develop from. And so I think it'll be useful to think about that model in this context. And South Africa has lots of bilateral agreements with India and China and the like. And so I think through our BRICS and other arrangements, certainly opportunities will exist to do that. The other area that I think is ripe for being able to take advantage of is biologics, because the biological products largely used in cancers and arthritis, etc., are high-value products and low volume. They're not a space that the Indians and the Chinese are effectively competing in. So it's an opportunity for us to enter much earlier than they are. And so if we develop our capacity in those areas, I know DTI has been working with a few companies to try and support them. Because if you look at cancer treatment, etc., they're high-cost treatments. It'll deal with the issues about trade deficit. But also from a scientific perspective, it'll start stimulating biological thinking, because the thinking for biologics is very different from chemical products. So us taking advantage of this space, because currently there's a big gap, they're not able to produce in this area. So I think that's an opportunity for us. Thanks. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you. Are there any follow-up questions?
Yes.
Just a small question, Chairperson. If perhaps Dr. Pillay could indicate to us, for instance, what perhaps the role of government in India is in the pharmaceutical sphere, if he has that information. If he doesn't, it's not a problem. For us to understand why that country is making so much progress. If it is possible, if he doesn't have the info, then it's fine, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I think my question would be more or less the same question with the question that Honorable Kiana has asked, because my question would be, if India has got people that come to South Africa and help in developing a pharmaceutical product in South Africa, why can't South Africa take students to India so that they are being educated and developed and come and produce in South Africa? Maybe if we do, as South Africans, who do not have the machinery, then the government, with the Indian government, have a bilateral so that we get those machines wherever they are getting them from and get them to South Africa so that we also produce our own. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is that all?
Skills, back to skills. Are we lacking skills because they migrated? Because I really want to be clear, because they migrated post 1994 or even before 1994, the country as a whole was lacking in terms of the chemical engineers. So that we are clear here as we move forward. So thank you.
We had an opportunity as the ED committee to meet with the engineering South Africa. It's the council, I think. You know, the challenge is not so much about whether we are not able to. Challenge is about we have learners who are interested in pursuing chemical engineering, but then when they get to university, they apply. There are blockages. The blockages come in different forms, and I think the Department of Higher Education is privy to those. A challenge. This is something that is going to be with us for some time, unless we boldly take a step to address those type of issues. It's something that perhaps we can also engage on a joint basis with the engineering council or whatever association that is getting the engineers in South Africa. Because the very same associations themselves, they do not accept, because also for you to be able to participate, to be able to be active, you have to be recognized by some of these associations. If you are not recognized, then the chances that you are going to make it, or as an individual to be recognized, are very limited. So there are so many challenges within our various academic professions that we have in South Africa that I think some of them higher education is dealing with. That's why I was saying there's a skills accord that we really need to ensure that account on the progress that's because that was supposed to lead us into actually understanding progress since the signing of that accord. That's how far have we gone. Maybe something that we're willing as Parliament collective to really demand accountability. From the GTI, are you going to respond to any questions?
Okay, so what I just wanted to touch on a few issues was in terms of the complexity of the pharmaceutical sector, which, I mean, that's been the point of discussion for the past 2 days. And the issues in terms of policy development that we're trying to address is to see how we can address, firstly, the skills issue that's been the topic for a while now, the regulatory aspects, the local manufacturing procurement issues. We work, collaboration has been key, so we work together with a Department of Health and Department of Science and Technology and so on, because we know the from a research and development perspective, it's important that we have that ongoing collaboration. From an incentives perspective, it's we do not have a customized sector incentive for pharmaceuticals as we do for other sectors. It is a priority sector in IPAP, and so when incentives in terms of the Black Industrialist Fund, the 12-hour incentive and so on, when companies apply and they meet these criteria, that they will then obviously be successful based on the terms and conditions that are set out there. But the pharmaceutical sector is capital intensive. It's a highly skilled sector. So notwithstanding that, we have to move beyond all of that, and in terms of the IP policies and so on, to try and attract that type of investments that we need in this country to address the burden of disease. So there are those areas that we need to zoom into and to see, and the way that we do it currently is to look at with the Department of Health to try and address these issues with companies to see specifically what their capacities are, and to try and feed that information and work together with the Department of Health to try and see how the procurement side can be upscaled and so on. Thank you. But Chair, we also bear in mind that we will be taking this forward in a more lengthy exercise. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, I think the role of government, for example, the question about role of government in India, I think When a country decides that they're going to prioritize pharmaceutical production, they do it in a very coordinated and integrated fashion. So in India, for example, the the office of the president and the vice president are integrally involved in the industrial strategy and pharmaceuticals department. So they bring together all of the government departments. So when I meet with my counterparts in India on health, you would anticipate that the colleagues in health from that department will be talking to me about health issues. But they're talking to me about their industrial strategy and their production of pharmaceuticals, etc. So there is a very broad integration of the strategy. So the health department officials, the DTI officials, the science and technology, etc., are very much part of a team that are looking at the same objective. Even their medicine regulator in India is very much focused on the same. So they've all brought together under the umbrella of the vice president, or whatever it's called, and they manage that. And so it's a very key strategy. When we go to a BRICS meeting, it's very clear that India has a strategy on pharmaceutical production. They're going to make sure that they share it with everybody and suggest that people take advantage of their opportunities. I think on the training and the collaboration, the opportunities exist because I am aware of memoranda of understanding that already have been signed between South Africa and India for us to send students to India. But what we have not done is coordinate and taken advantage of it so that we can then come together as a country and say, well, these are the students we want to send and we would like you to come and set up some training facilities in our country, support our academics to help people train, etc., so that this can be taken to the next level. Because currently all it is an agreement on paper, but we've not taken advantage of it from our side. I think it's probably something we should be doing. In terms of the skills pre and post 1994, I think, for example, if you look at Aspen Pharmacare, Aspen Pharmacare was historically South African druggist in pre-94. And South African druggist was established by the apartheid government to basically support pharmaceutical production because there was always this concern that they're not going to get access to medicine, so they wanted to have some local capacity. So I think that thinking along those lines, we need to have expanded the way the thinking was at the time, but to think about it in the broader South African context as we see it now. And I think around chemical engineers and the like, there was never a thinking that we would become API producers one day. And so I think that's why the planning around API plants, etc., never happened. And so the Ketlapela project of trying to produce APIs for ARVs is such a big challenge, largely because we don't have those skills here. So if we were to set up the plant, we'd have to partner with somebody from India or China effectively, or another country that produces the API, to come and set up the plant, because there's not like enough people in this country that's going to be able to do that on their own.
Yeah. If India could set up plants in Russia for API, why can't they do so here? Otherwise we'll have a problem. And I think the same, China, because it's also good in terms of the information we have. So I think we need to also look into that. My worry is that when I listen to DTI, which is responsible for industry development, it seems not, maybe here you'll pardon my ignorance if I'm really ignorant and I'm not putting things there correctly. It seems like we are not focused on this particular plan that we have. If we focus, it's like it's a by the way thing because we want to incentivize and therefore it ends there. But in terms of going all out, we don't seem to be doing that. If I'm wrong, correct me, but this is the perception I have ever since we started this discussion. Want to come in?
Thank you, Chair. So I just wanted to...
Sorry, Chair, before she responds,
Chair, I'm listening about the agreements, the accords that have been signed between the departments and the other countries, particularly the Indian country. Is there no way? Maybe we should give it a direct directive, as to say, if we are not taking advantage of the accord that we have signed between ourselves and India and any other country, why don't you, who's supposed to make a follow through to that? And I'm sure these agreements were not signed yesterday. They were signed quite some time back, but we're not taking advantage of those. Can we not get a report as to what is happening? Let us take advantage of that kind of agreement.
Thank you, Chair. So I just wanted to highlight the fact that our presentation was really in response to the letter that was provided to us by the Portfolio Committee. And so we didn't take the opportunity to highlight the DTI's work in terms of developing an industry development framework. Notably, the DTI has focused previously on just designation and preferential procurement as the lever that would support industry's development. And when I arrived at the desk, the reality was given the increasing trade deficit and the issues around the currency exchanges, et cetera, that we needed to look at a variety of enablers to help the industry sustain itself and grow, as well as start looking at how we overcome this erosion in the export base by contribution of pharmaceutical exports out of the country. So it's on that basis that we are now working on a plan. The industry did not have a plan prior to, in the last few years. We are only now looking at a plan on the industry's development. And so we welcome in the next meeting with yourself to present a framework and to present objectives and some implementation plans within that specific plan. On the issue around the lack of incentives, the industry doesn't have a sector-specific incentive. One of the biggest problems, I guess, besides the, you know, some of the enabling issues like the regulatory inefficiencies, the skills issues, is that the pharma industry requires huge capital upfront capital investments. Even in the biotech industry, if you had to produce a biosimilar, the upfront capital investment and the technology investments in terms of, even if it's an off-patent biologic, the technology cost that's required is huge. And given our economic climate at the moment and the budget costs that have impacted departments such as the DTI, there isn't adequate incentives to incentivize companies to invest here. So we'd have to look at other enablers and partnerships in order to develop the industry. On the issue around skills, the DTI with UNIDO, we've hosted a workshop and we've identified in terms of the development of the industry and as Dr. Pillay said, one of the issues is around formulation capacity but industrial pharmacists. So what we've done is we've taken the matter to the Human Resources Development Council that is chaired by the Deputy President, and there is consensus now that the Secretariat would assist us in putting together programs around developing the skills gap in the industry. And that will be done in a coordinated fashion where the Secretariat would host or assist coordinating departments to be in one meeting and directing specific programs going forward. On the issue of the charter, we'll send that to yourself. In terms of the Black Industrialist scheme and the DTI, so pharmaceuticals being a priority sector of IPAP means that companies who comply with the BIS guidelines get a priority or preference within the scheme. and we have supported a few companies in this space, but just bear in mind that there's a guideline that companies need to be 51% black-owned or more in order to qualify for the scheme. So what we have supported a number of companies, predominantly in the medical device space. You would have heard of some of them, specifically around condom manufacturing. There is another application for the API production. Well, actually, there's two applications for API production that has been lodged with the DTI for that in that scheme. And we work with the IDC then also around BBBE transactions to move companies from where they are currently, for example, Adcock, into that space. And in terms of the bilateral agreements, we take note of that, and we will be, I think give us the opportunity to come present a framework to yourselves on the industry development plan.
No, I think honourable members, we managed to get all the clarities. We are agreeing that we are going to come back, but as we'll be coming back, we will be communicating with both departments, and I want to appeal on behalf of all the portfolio committees, the information that we will need at the time, we must receive that on time so that we are then able to come, having gone through, and be really be able to focus. But this process, in thanking the economic development, has also exposed some of the challenges that we are to be faced with. In fact, not challenges, work that we are to do as portfolio committees and as members of the National Assembly. Putting politics aside, this country, I always believe that you only be aware of the intensity of the challenges that you are having when you are outside of a particular system. Skills. I'm going back there. Skills. And therefore, the issue of skills development, we must then ensure that the issue of early childhood development, because if we want to leave a legacy, we must ensure that the issue of early childhood development in terms of, and the transformation of some of these areas, we are reminded, for instance, in health, the issue of the National Health Laboratory, in the NHLS, the technicians that are not, as much as they have passed, but the board, when they write the examination, they don't, and we've been very, very emphatic in the Department of Health that thing must change. So as members of these committees in our various areas, I think that it's going to be important that we tease that out. It's going to be important that we also have a bilateral meeting, invite both higher education and training and science and technology. We must, you know, this thing that departments were working in silos is easier said than done. I think the economic development has started it and we must enhance it. So when we come back in August, in moving forward, we must ensure that how then do we ensure that we bring all this together, and even if we start one step, a pilot, but we must not be apologetic about it. And we're not going to succumb as the African National Congress to political blackmail. We are going to do these issues in moving forward, and we're not going to be apologetic in saying now there are policy issues that have been raised, and as we are going to our policy conference, we will elevate, highlight some of these things so that as we move forward, we are then able to say this is our focus. We on behalf of the of health, I think we want to thank you very much, Honorable Coleman, for inviting us. And rest assured, we are not going to be sitting on our laurels. We are then going to ensure that some of these issues of these areas are being looked into for the benefit of our people who are seated at home at times being told to come back because Panadol is not available. I'm making it just simple. Panadol is not available. It's those small things that make or break any sector. So for us, it's not about the high-powered language and presentation ends here, because when we go on the ground, people being turned back a day or two for a packet of Panadol, for a packet of antibiotics, it's not correct. And therefore, these meetings are meetings that are ensured that that happens. Thank you very much. I'll hand over to you for the... Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Let's also thank you and your committee for really availing yourselves. We know that all committees are busy with their oversight, they're busy with other businesses, but for prioritizing us, we really feel that we also feel very important. The issues, you'll agree, of paramount importance that we attend to, and it's not one portfolio committee that's going to be able to really address some of these issues. We all must help each other. If government is trying, we must also be able to identify loopholes there and there, so that we always push them to do their best. We know that they are doing something, but until we satisfy that they are doing to the best of their ability, we'll keep on pushing. So it's our job to talk too much and to push. That's our job as politicians. So thank you very much, Ma'am Stein, Ma'am Sumaru, Department of Health, thank you very much for being here with us, not just being here, but responding to our request, coming here prepared, presenting to us. I'm hoping that you've taken all the issues that were raised here with the hope that in our follow-up meeting, you'll be able to address. I know we had requested you to deal with specific issues for today, but as we engage, you might have seen the need for other areas to be covered. Because unless we do so, we're not going to be able to tackle the issues that are before us, especially around growth and jobs. We have one of the highest unemployment rates in South Africa. And if we can't do something about that, even where we can, then it means we are lacking somehow. So thank you so much to members of Economic Development for always being there. I have an announcement to make to members of the Economic Development after I have adjourned the meeting of the joint committee meeting. Thank you so much. Solo, PLO of the minister there, I hope you took notes. Thank you. The meeting stands adjourned.